And I'm also going to be ending up talking about specific things that are happening on the federal level and ways for folks to get involved. And it's really actually a lovely way that this worked out, starting off with Kellen's overview and then kind of ending up with mine. It's odd because he and I usually actually do the opposite parts of it. So I want to start off talking about, oh, mine worked. One of the big things that we work for in LGBT health on the federal level is a better reflection of actual people. Right, you see this a lot of times with disparities, and Kellen spoke quite a bit about it. The idea that you either have to be a person of color, or LGBT, a woman, or a non-English speaker, an immigrant, or a mother, and there's very little work and data that really talks about that overlap, and even less work that in policy that talks about it. But what we see over and over again is that that's not actually how reality works, right, that many of us identify in many different places. And then when you look at health disparities in particular, you can see this. And one of my favorite examples is around cigarette smoking, right? So let's say you are a young African-American gay man. You grow up in the African-American community. You're exposed to all of those ads saying that this is what it means to be black. You smoke menthol cigarettes, right? You come out, you start going to gay bars, and then what do you have in gay publications? You have ad after ad after ad that tells you what it means to be a gay man is also to smoke. So what you have is layered upon layer disparity and also layer upon layer of media. The way that I like to translate this is disparity pie. And disparity pie works two different ways, right? We all have our own little slice. I'm gonna go with pizza. So pizza, because I'm from New Jersey, pizza, the slice has pepperoni and you are the pepperoni slice. And if someone's slice starts to get a little bit bigger, then you're gonna have less pizza to eat. I think this is important in advocacy because what ends up happening is that those of us that work in different health disparity communities end up fighting against each other instead of actually working together for common large scale policy change. And what I actually wanna speak about is what those things can look like. This is one cycle of federal change. If I was doing a lobbying workshop, it would look very different. And I'm gonna talk about why I did this. And as you can see, they all feed into each other. Representation. It's incredibly important to have people who represent your community, our community, be in places of power. And those can be in numerous different places. So obviously, there's someone like Representative Tammy Baldwin, right? An out lesbian from Wisconsin whose pet issue and whose biggest issue is health. So nothing helps us move things through the legislature faster than talking to Tammy Baldwin's staff, right? Because they are with us on LGBT issues, there's no explaining, they're with us on health issues, and we can push things through that way. The other way that representation is important, and this is particularly important for folks in this room, because you do have all these nice letters after your name, which are incredibly important on the federal level, right? We like PhD, we like MD, we like MPH. Is that there are a number of different decision-making and regulatory bodies that are right now coming into formation, a lot of them through the healthcare reform or the Affordable Care Act, as it's now known. And we, part of my consulting gigs, is to help identify people to go on to those different panels to make sure there's an LGBT voice. And I'm gonna use one great example, who is Dr. Beth Wilson. She is being staffed by the National Coalition for LGBT Health, and she sits on, through this kind of work, she's an out lesbian, she's an MD, she's a pediatrician, and she's sitting on the panel that talks about medically underserved populations. So trying to figure out what that definition looks like, that's incredibly important because a lot of federal money, including federally qualified health centers, hinges on what that definition looks like. And that definition is not easy for the LGBT community because oftentimes it's about geography, which we know is not true for our community. We will travel for competent healthcare. We will travel far. And also about unplanned pregnancies. So the rate of unplanned pregnancies and maternal mortality is not as high in the LGBT community because a lot of us actually have to plan our pregnancies in some pretty concrete and serious ways. I'm 32, so you know, clocks are ticking here. So that doesn't work for our community. So what we see are places like the Mazzoni Center in Philadelphia serving medically underserved folks, but not being able to qualify for it because they don't meet the requisite hoop jumping. And putting those kinds of people onto those panels allow an LGBT voice to happen from the inside. It's also important we talk about representation for people who have multiple identities, because it's constantly important to say, So Dr. Linda Spooner, who is the board chair of the Mountaineer Project, African-American lesbian, identifies as butch. She is an MD and a JD. Getting her onto these kinds of panels where she has multiple identities, comes from the rural South. She can bring all of those things to light in one person, and it makes a reality happen for folks who have never thought about it before. And these all feed into each other. And the next one I'm going to talk about is data. Data is a really great place for intersectional advocacy because data issues impact us all. So for LGBT people, we're constantly trying to get onto surveys, but then the issue comes up. So one of the big pushes, the National Health Interview Survey, LGBT inclusion, but the keeping the sample size large enough to actually count LGBT people. And then the other big issue, the API community, making sure there's a big enough sample size there to actually break down into different Asian Pacific Islander communities and give better reflective data, hugely important. So that's one really obvious place. We all want the same end result, a larger sample size. It helps both communities, and it particularly helps people who are API and LGBT. The other two places under data, correct terms, making sure that people feel reflected in that data, right? So you see this in the difference between white and Hispanic, whether or not to put queer on and what that looks like. And that's one of those conversations we're constantly having. What works on the federal level? Can we say this, right? How does that look? And then the idea of changing populations. So we know that our community is changing. LGBT folks, we've always been here, but now we're out. And that's a big difference. And the other thing I would say to that, too, is making sure that the people feel safe answering. So you saw this big around the census, right? Saying, coming to the community, saying LGBT people, you can be out on the census, even if you're not out in the workplace. And saying to people who are in this country without papers, we're not going to turn this over to immigration, right? So where can we say there, what's safety around surveys, and what kind of public education can happen? Research is another great one. You keep hearing over and over again about evidence base and the need for an evidence base, but what happens when you've never been counted, right? What happens when there's no box for you to check? And we went to the National Prevention Strategy talk this morning, which was amazing and informative, and again, it's about evidence base, but what funds are going to create an evidence base where none currently exists? And to finally start having that happen. So for example, transgender people are routinely removed from all medical research. What does that mean? What does this mean when someone's trying to adhere to their medications? What does that look like? The other place I want to, this is actually one of my favorite ones around research, is during the Affordable Care Act, during the hideous legislative process that led to it, there was a group of progressive groups that came together called Healthcare for America Now. And there was a disparities group. And it was myself, probably 30 other people, a woman from Special Olympics, and a woman from La Raza. And by the end, after meeting every week, we could literally just fill each other's sentences because we just kept talking about the same issues over and over. Oh, that counts for LGBT. Oh, disability has never been counted before. Oh, what does access look like? And we could just fill each other's sentences, and how does it look stronger to go forward as a community saying, Senator Mendez, am I right in the last name, from New Jersey, cares about LGBT issues, what he really cares about is Latino-Latina issues. How much stronger is it to go in with La Raza and have that conversation? The other place where we see this is definitions. And as Kellen mentioned, the Partnership for Family Inclusion, it's a group made up of the Coalition, Centerlink, which is LGBT community centers, the Family Equality Council, National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health, and NAPOF, the Asian Pacific American Women's Foundation. And what we basically came to realize is that all of these communities are screwed under the federal definition of family, right? That's good phrasing. For LGBT folks, we know that's about DOMA, right? The inability to recognize our relationships across state lines. What does that look like? It's great if you're in California, you're protected there. You move to Kentucky, you've got no protections. What does it mean for families who have undocumented members, where there is a child who was born in the States, a mother who's undocumented, and a grandmother who is documented? Who can we give access to make sure that they are being able to recognize all the state and federal health programs that they can reach? So what we basically came through was to go through all the definitions of family, to find a definition of family that could work for us and also had federal precedent. And that's actually in the Federal Family Medical Leave Act, which is a relationship that is defined by blood, affinity, or kinship. So how can we prove kinship? Living in the same residence, having signed forms saying that we're each other's power of attorney. And then what does that look like on a, when people don't have access to attorneys, right? Where can we make these resources available for folks and in multiple languages for people to fill out? And this all leads into funding programs and policies. The louder we are, the harder it is to ignore. I'm going to talk about some of the things going on now. The Institute of Medicine report is coming out in March. It's not going to say, here's the next step. It's going to say, here's all the missing pieces, and there it's going to lead us to the next steps. It's going to be a really pivotal part of research. Healthy People 2020, since I'm talking to a room of fellow data geeks, the coalition was actually formed around LGBT inclusion in Healthy People 2010. We had LGBT inclusion at that time. We were looking for LGBT inclusion this year, and Healthy People 2020 were actually a named demographic group. A huge, huge step forward, because if you are applying for federal funds, you need to be counted there. If you're applying for large-scale private funds, you need to be counted there too. And then last but not least, healthcare reform. And I'm just gonna briefly go over those because I have about two more minutes. Essential health benefits. What is an essential health benefit that takes into mind the needs of the LGBT community, especially around the transgender community? So if we are thinking, a lot of health benefits are gender divided. You check F on a box and it means that you get coverage for a pap smear. What if you check M on a box and you also need coverage for a pap smear? What if you're a gay or bisexual man who needs an anal pap? What can that look like? Is that actually going to get covered? Having those conversations now. Going back to definitions, every place you're going to define family or spouse or child, those will last long after whatever administration is in, and we need to make sure that they happen. Non-discrimination. LGBT people are not a named non-discrimination category in the Affordable Care Act, but there is some precedent around it, and how do we get inclusion there? Data, are we going to be counted? Because there's going to be a huge, large-scale data rolling out to see how healthcare reform impacts our health today and impacts it tomorrow. Publicity, and this is, again, where representation matters. So if you look right now at healthcare.gov, there is, and you can check, it's a really great website, and you can click through all the different buttons. It gives you all different ways of being covered. Domestic partner benefits are not an option. Folks from the coalition, myself, and about 10 other people, we sit down to go meet with the man, Richard Surian, who is in charge of all of that. He is the Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs. We sit down, we're all ready to kind of make that argument, and he says, I'm a gay man, I already know about the domestic partner thing, I guess that's a problem, it'll be fixed next month. You're like, okay, well, thank you for the meeting, right? It's that kind of representation, and getting our folks in there means that we actually makes our jobs a lot easier, because they don't have to see it through our eyes, they can see it through their own. The next one, for state government folks especially, there's going to be a lot of money rolling out around community transformation grants, around publicity and public education materials, and a lot of this money is going to be going to large-scale community groups, but also to state governments, and they're going to be talking about health disparity populations. We're working on the federal level to make sure that's that LGBT is named. We also need to make sure it's happening on the state level. And the last two things I'm going to end with are how to be involved. So one, going back to those panels, if you are someone who occasionally wants to be on hour-long or three-hour-long conference calls with folks from Washington, D.C., and or you really love Rockville, Maryland, and want to spend a day or two there and make some pretty serious federal change, you should feel free to speak to Kellen or I, because we are really looking to ramp that up, especially around that healthcare. And the other one I would say, to put a plug in for my old organization, is to be signed up for the coalition's listserv, because as one of our favorite tools in Washington, D.C. is the sign-on letter, which is we say, essential health benefits are coming out, we need you to pay attention to this community, how many organizations, how many individuals can we get to sign on to this letter to then send it into the Department of Health and Human Services to say, see, this is actually a national issue. And this is particularly important for those of us, not to put down, I'm from New Jersey, New York, San Francisco, LA, but from people from more rural areas, to say that we exist every place, it really needs to be shown over and over. So with that, thank you very much, and now we go to questions.
Thank you very much, and we'll take questions until 2 o'clock and however late we can stay. First one.
Yeah, this is sort of a question for the whole panel and also for people in the room who are doing data collection. My name is Rachel, and I'm from a small nonprofit in Minneapolis that does health and wellness work for the LGBT community. And with respect to transgender issues, we do a lot of work around trans issues and genderqueer issues. And we make it a point on our assessment forms to distinguish between gender assigned at birth and gender identity and expression, so that we can more specifically tailor our services and programs and policies that come out of the research that we collect to actually be specific for groups of people rather than just kind of, because that's the sort of conundrum there with that particular piece. So I just wanted to encourage people to think about that when they're doing data collection, specifically trans and genderqueer issues, to make that distinction. And then the other thing is that this is very small in relation to everything else that's going on, but the prevalence of unplanned pregnancy in adolescents is twice as high for lesbian, gay, bi, trans, queer youth than it is as their heterosexual peers. So it actually is a problem.
No, and actually I misspoke. Thank you for bringing that up. It's not that it's not a problem, because you're right, it is twice as high.
It's an age thing.
No, it's not even an age thing. It's that then you can identify those people as LGBT. So I'm Callan Lord in New York City serving LGBT folks, and I can identify the unplanned pregnancy data with the community I'm serving.
Right, exactly, because we're not collecting that data.
So exactly.
I would also encourage people, as they go to other, especially people are going to like adolescent sessions here, to really ask those questions of the presenters about why, or if they're collecting data on sexual orientation, and if they're not, why they aren't, because it's actually a really big problem that's pretty invisible, because people feel that asking about sexual orientation in adolescence is just too sensitive. It's even more sensitive, you know, it's sensitive in general, but it's even more sensitive with adolescents, but it's really critical because it has such an impact on lifelong health outcomes. So, that's all.
More questions? Yes.
Explain the meaning of queer in regards to sexual orientation and also genderqueer.
We'd like to.
Wow, so that's a big question. So genderqueer, I guess I'll start with that. Basically, people who don't identify as either traditional gender category, male or female, people identify that way for lots of different reasons, but I guess people who don't want to endorse a binary gender system that only has two distinct genders. And then queer in general, in terms of sexual orientation, or maybe either, historically used as an insult. It's a way of reclaiming that in a positive sense, maybe embracing some weirdness. It's also generational. A lot of younger folks use those words, and some older folks as well, but also some people don't like them. You know, maybe they grew up maybe more being called that as an insult, and so it's harder to associate that with something positive. Anyone else like to add to that?
Did that answer it?
No, I identify as an androgynous person. I find the term genderqueer offensive. It's like it's an insult. I wish the LGBT community would embrace the term queer as if they're insulting themselves.
Yeah, so a lot of people feel like that it's a way to take that back and say, that's something that I'm proud of, and you can't use that word to hurt me because I'm using it in a way that I'm proud of. But yeah, I respect your wanting to not use it for yourself. That's part of the importance of self-identification.
Yeah, and just speaking for myself, and this of course confounds all the data geeks, myself included, because I use queer to refer to both my sexual orientation and my gender identity, because I'm not generally out as trans. It's a great privilege to be here with you all. But I use it to refer to the fact that I have a non-traditional history when it comes to thinking about sexual orientation. When I was assigned female, I dated exclusively women. Now that I've transitioned, I date both men and women. And so that's a way for me of reclaiming a little bit of that history while not necessarily going into the, well, my sexual orientation box is, and my gender identity box is. For me, it's a way of bringing all of those things to the table without necessarily having to drop my drawers. In a very real sense, you know, and pretty much.
Thanks, Molly and Colin. First in the back, Michael.
I see these seven categories as collapsing into smaller categories. It kind of bisexual was an option if you had chosen one of the non-traditional gender categories. Otherwise, you were kicked out if you were just hetero and not non-traditionally gendered.